a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Religion Today with Martin Tanner, a weekly look at religion and spirituality here at home and around the world. Now, here's your host, Martin Tanner.
Welcome. This is Religion Today. I'm your host, Martin Tanner. Today's show topic was suggested by a listener, Tanisha, whom I thank for her excellent suggestion. The question that she posed was about same-sex attraction in the church. And that is kind of a broad topic, LGBTQI issues. I could go in a lot of different directions with this, but let me start off with this point. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has stated a number of different times that they unequivocally condemn any discrimination of any of God's children based on gender identity, race, sexual identity, orientation, or religious affiliation. If you want more information about that, take a look at the LDS Church's website, which has an excellent article on the church's position about same-sex attraction. As a matter of fact, the name of the article is Same-Sex Attraction. Some of the better organizations involved in the LDS faith that support LGBTQI people would include a group called Arizona, and this is my opinion, okay, these are not official church groups. There's a group called Arizona LDS LGBTQ, acronym ALL. They're members of the LDS faith. There's a group called LDS Beacon that works with LDS Word and Church leaders. There's a group called Mormons Building Bridges Church members supporting LGBTQI members and others. One I like especially is North Star, faith-affirming resource to help LGBTQI individuals remain true to LDS faith principles. That, I think, is sort of at the crux of the matter. LDS belief on procreation and intimacy is really at the core of its faith, but not just LDS faith. For most Christian traditions, if one looks at the Bible and Judaism, virtually all religious faiths for millennia have and still do say that intimacy should be between a husband and a wife. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints proclamation on the family, especially the fourth paragraph, strongly supports this principle. It's also available online. This isn't just a false tradition of the fathers thing, as some critics suggest. This is a fundamental belief of the LDS faith. And it's supported in science, in fact. What am I talking about here? That marriage between a man and a woman in a traditional family setting consisting of a father and a mother is what's best for children. Now, certainly, that doesn't mean that other forms of families can't work for children. But what it does mean is that the ideal and what should be supported as the ideal is the traditional family. When other forms of families are formally sanctioned, as societies have now done for the past 30 or 40 years, it reduces the ability of children to learn, to progress, and to be happy. And that's the reason that for virtually all of human history until very recently, Most All Faiths and the LDS Church now supports the idea of a traditional family. Now, how can I say that a traditional family with a father and a mother and not two fathers or two mothers is best for children? Well, there have been thousands and thousands of studies that have been done by organizations, some that hoped for different results, that say that this is true. Most people over the age of 4 or 5 have noticed that girls and boys, women and men, are different in the way they look biologically, in the way they think and approach life. It's funny that 30 years ago, when I was first involved in these kinds of discussions, debates, radio and TV shows on these kinds of issues, the argument was that LGBTQ individuals are born that way and they couldn't help it. And after the science determined that that really couldn't be confirmed scientifically, the argument shifted. And today the argument is, well, everybody should be able to choose. Choose whatever you want to. To me, that doesn't sound too scientific. I'll give you an example. My DNA, if you look at my biological history, I'm Scotch, English, Southern European, some Eastern European, and 1% Jewish. I love the Japanese culture. That's where I went on my church mission. I identify in many ways with Japan and its Japanese culture and people. I am not biologically Japanese. I couldn't be if I spent more and more and more time and wanted to identify as Black. I could do that in a cultural sense, but I can't become Black. If somehow I decided that I wanted to identify as Hispanic or with some Central or South American country, I could identify with them, but I could not biologically become Hispanic. This is an important distinction. It's a little bit like politics. Over time, something that you identify with becomes stronger and stronger for you, but it may not be biological. There are people who are Democrats who say, I could never become Republican, but there is no Democrat gene. You're not born a Democrat. And people who are Republican may say, I could never choose to be a Democrat, but there is no Republican gene. These are most definitely choices, even though choices that as we pursue a certain path become more and more ingrained and more difficult to change. Before we jump more into the topic of exactly where the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints stands on many of these issues, I wanted to bring up a few points that are sometimes mentioned by LGBTQ articles and in blogs on the internet. What they say is something like this in a nutshell. Nowhere in the Bible does it say that Jesus or any of the apostles were married, so they were probably gay. And I've seen some that say Jesus and the apostles went to preach with other men, not with women, and not with their wives. So I think they were probably gay. I've recently read one that said, Paul said it was better to be single in the New Testament. So we know he was gay. Well, if you look closely, not superficially, the evidence proves all of these claims are just not true. For example, in Mark chapter 1, verses 30 and 31, we read about Jesus being told that Peter's mother-in-law was sick in bed with a fever. Jesus went to her, took a hold of her hand, helped her up. The fever left. Peter was married. He had a mother-in-law. Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 5, And this is a plain English translation. It doesn't come across quite as clear in the King James, but this is what it says. Don't we have the right to take along our Christian or our believing wife along with us when we proselyte, as do the other apostles and the Lord's brother, talking about James, and Peter? This is 1 Corinthians 9:5 again. Paul wouldn't have argued that he had the right to take his wife proselyting with him if he wasn't married. Paul is also telling us that the other apostles were married. During Jesus' lifetime, nearly all Jewish men were married. It was their duty as a Jew. There was a very common saying at that time, God has blessed the man who has a wife and children. God has cursed the man who has no wife and no children. Certainly, Jews didn't like Jesus. I mean, that would be the understatement of the millennia. They came up with every disparaging comment about him that they could, but they never claimed that God had cursed Jesus because he had no wife and no children. They would have done that. Jesus, in all likelihood, was probably married too, although we cannot know that for sure. All right, when we come back, more about this fabulous topic of same-sex attraction and what the church, the LDS faith, thinks about it, what other faiths think about it, and what biology says. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today. We'll be right back.
Religion Today with Martin Tanner continues on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
We're back. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today. Let's turn now to see what the New Testament says about same-sex acts. Paul's Jewish background was something that made him so that he was a pretty hard-nosed guy and sometimes spoke very directly and bluntly. Let's see what Paul had to say about some of these ideas. If you go to 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 9 through 11, you will read this very strong statement by Paul. Surely you know that the wicked will not possess God's kingdom. Do not fool yourselves. People who are immoral or who worship idols or are adulterers or engage in homosexual acts or who steal or are greedy or are drunkards or who slander others or are thieves, none of these will possess God's kingdom. Then he goes on to say this, some of you were like that, but you have been purified from sin. You have been dedicated to God. You have been put right with God by the Lord Jesus Christ and by the Spirit of our God. Paul condemns what he describes as a list of sins, but also says that those people who have sinned can certainly be forgiven. In Romans chapter 1, verses 26 and 27, we have this statement from Paul. Quote, because they do this, God has given them over to shameful passions. Even the women pervert the natural use of their sex by unnatural acts. In the same way, the men give up their natural sexual relations with women and burn with passion for each other. And he goes on and talks about that, and not in a positive way. There, it's not just men that he's condemning that are same-sex, it's women as well. And there are a number of others. 1 Timothy chapter 1, verses 9 through 11. There's a comment in Jude about the sins of Sodom and Gomorrah. There are a number of others as well. These are important issues. These are significant issues. Let me address very directly some of the questions that come up about some of these questions. The first one is, isn't the LDS position that LGBTQ people of acting out on their attractions are the same way that the ban on black people not being able to hold the priesthood was until 1978? Well, that's an interesting analogy. The problem with that analogy is that I would never be able to say that the idea of blacks not being able to hold the priesthood was proper, because during Joseph Smith's lifetime and under his tenure as president of the church, a number of black Latter-day Saints were baptized, held priesthood positions, priests, elders, high priests. This is something that changed because the church was, in essence, forced into it. Or Brigham Young felt the church was forced into it, or he believed, based on prior bad ideas that he brought within his belief system from other Christian faiths, the whole idea of the curse of Cain that was running rampant in Christianity at the time. Those are different from the same-sex attraction. Why are they different? I will tell you that a person's vision before God, the way they are seen before God, is something that, according to basic LDS theology, the Book of Mormon says all are alike unto God, male and female, black and white, bond and free. It all are alike unto God. That's fundamental from the beginning. There is, from the beginning, statements in Christianity and in the Book of Mormon also, if you look closely, there are some pretty negative references to Sodom and Gomorrah that say that the idea of same-sex attractions are not the appropriate way to pursue life, and that's not what a church should sanction. Hence, same-sex attraction is something that's not something that means a member can't be a Latter-day Saint in good standing, as long as one doesn't act out on it. The same way a heterosexual person is able to be a member in good standing, unless they act out on impulses outside of marriage. That's the key. Now, there's another comment that comes up, another question that comes up, and it goes something like this. There are people who are born that are more than just male and female. And so doesn't that just, I mean, we've got transgender, we've got gender dysphoria, we have all kinds of things. Doesn't that disprove the LDS idea that spirits are male or female? The short answer is science doesn't back that up either. If humans carry a Y chromosome, then they have the SRY code, and that's the determining factor. What I'm getting in genetics here, I'll make this really, really simple. If an individual has a Y chromosome with this SRY gene, then they will always be biologically male. Absent a Y chromosome and a functioning SRY gene, then you're always biologically a female. Now, why does that mean anything, or why should it mean anything? Well, I've seen these websites, some with people who have PhDs, who say things like, oh, I can come up with at least six or seven different kinds of sexes within the human family. X, XX, XXY, XY, XYY, and triple XY. Well, that argument doesn't work because the 2X is the typical female. The XY is the typical male, way beyond 99% of the time. Those other very unusual groups, every single time there is a Y present, it's a male. Doesn't matter if it's XXY, that's the way it works. And every time there's no Y absence, always a female. Doesn't matter if there's 1X or 2Xs or multiple Xs. If there's no Y, it's always female. So that's the way it works. Saying that there are a whole bunch of new sexes or different kinds of sexes is a little bit like saying somebody who has Down syndrome, which consists of three instead of two copies of a certain chromosome, chromosome 21, or a person who has sickle cell syndrome, or a person with some other disorder like leukemia, is a new kind of human being. It just doesn't work. They're still humans, and they're all still within one or another category. If you have an extra Y, you're still a male. If you don't have Ys, you're a female. Just like if you have Downs or sickle cell or leukemia, you're still a person. To wrap things up, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and its members love and support everyone. Doesn't matter how you see yourself. It also teaches that marriage should be between a man and a woman, and there should be no intimacy outside of marriage. That's it. However a person identifies, to use the current form, that person can still be a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and can of course have callings, enter the temple, and if otherwise worthy, do anything else that church membership affords, as long as they do not practice or advocate intimacy outside of marriage. That's the bottom line. I hope this has helped people. If you have questions or comments, if you think somehow I'm wrong or would like more information, feel free to send me an email. I always enjoy those. Send them to martinstanner@gmail.com. martinstanner@gmail.com. I'll be glad to respond. See you next week. Thanks for listening.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.